Russian President Vladimir Putin says the NATO-backed military development of Ukraine poses a serious threat to his country. Palestinian resistance group Islamic Jihad says its prisoners in Israeli jails will not end their hunger strike unless their demands are met. Also in the headline, Saudi Arabia's warplanes bomb drug warehouses in the Yemeni capital Sana'a, leaving one person dead and three others injured. Thank you for joining us. Our top story this hour, the Russian president says Ukraine's military development with Western support is a threat to his country.
Formal membership of Ukraine in NATO may not take place, but military development of the territory is already underway, and this really poses a threat for the Russian Federation. We are aware of this.
Vladimir Putin also described the U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin's visit to Ukraine as a move that facilitates Ukraine's NATO membership bid and threatens Russia's interests. During his Tuesday visit to Kiev, Austin said no third country has the right to stop Ukraine from becoming a NATO member. Tensions are running high between Moscow and the Western military alliance. And NATO is preparing an anti-Russia strategy. The Secretary General of the Western Military Alliance says members are about to agree on an overarching plan for the defense of the Euro-Atlantic area.
We are in the midst of a transformation of NATO. Over the last years, we have stepped up and refocused on our collective defense to protect our own territory. And therefore, NATO ministers, NATO defense ministers, will today agree a new set of capability targets for all allies.
Stoltenberg noted the plan ensures that the alliance has, quote, the right forces in the right place at the right time. He underlined that the relationship between NATO and Russia is at its lowest point. Meanwhile, defense ministers from some NATO members have been quoted as saying that the new master plan is aimed at defending against any potential Russian attack. The confidential strategy is reportedly for simultaneous attacks using nuclear weapons, hacking of computer networks, and assaults from space. The remarks reaffirmed the alliance's core goal of deterring Russia. Moscow has, however, denied any aggressive intentions, saying it is NATO that risks destabilizing Europe. Political commentator Aidan Jonah says the West has always had an aggressive attitude towards Russia.
I think it really like starts back to obviously the fall of the Soviet Union itself. I mean, you look at Gorbachev and the leaders of the Soviet Union when there's really full disillusion. There is promises from the West of non-aggression, of not expanding NATO. Instead, you had NATO continuing to expand. You had really Western attempts to balkanize Russia, and really just a basic lack of respect for the Russian nation as a sovereign entity. Whether you look at America's role in rigging the 1996 elections. Simply put, to the present day, with the U.S. pulling out of treaties around nuclear weapons and such, it's simply put, at every single step of the way, almost every single step of the way, Russia has tried to act in good faith, and the West has simply acted in a really aggressive and borderline violent manner.
Iran and Russia have been very close, especially when it comes to their cooperation in fighting terrorists in Syria, but the relationship has been taken to a higher level with the recent visit to Russia by the chairman of the chiefs of staff of the Iranian Armed Forces, Major General Mohammad Baqari. During the visit, both sides agreed to boost the defense ties further.
Chairman of the Chief of Staff of the Iranian Armed Forces, Major General Mohammad Baqari, has urged development of the country's defense ties with Russia. Baqari, who made the remarks during a visit to Russia, said the ties between the two countries are deepening further and growing stronger in all areas. He pointed to his talks during the trip with his Russian counterpart and said that Tehran is determined to expand military cooperation with Russia in line with the administration of President Ebrahim Raisi's Look to the East policy. The top Iranian commander underlined that Iran and Russia will strengthen military cooperation. Heading a high-ranking military delegation, Baghdadi traveled to Moscow at the official invitation of the Minister of Defense of the Russian Federation, Sergei Shoigu. Russia and Iran discussed expanding cooperation in fighting international terrorism, which has been a top concern in Iraq, Syria, Afghanistan, and the Caucasus region.
It's natural to counter the active threats of war that have been coming from America, not just during this administration, but during the previous presidential administration.
This may indicate that their military cooperation will be more pronounced when it comes to fighting extremists and terrorists in Syria. The sticking point here will be how the two will counter the repeated Israeli strikes on Syria. There are also other issues that could involve Iran and Russian military cooperation. PJAC terrorists in Iraq's Erbil region is a problem that Iran has addressed. Recently, Iran warned Iraq's Kurdistan regional government against allowing terrorist groups to use its territory to pose threats against the Islamic Republic. The Caucasus region, which includes Azerbaijan, is another issue. Here, Israel plays a factor since it is helping Azerbaijan militarily.
This has got to be a first priority to make sure that the United States War Department, which is basically the entire government, to make sure that the United States War Department understands that any aggression, physical, military aggression toward Iran will be responded to under full rights of sovereignty in international law and will exert a cost.
The enhancement of Iran-Russia military ties is part of the Islamic Republic's grandeur scheme called Look to the East. This not only involves Russia, but also China. Iran's induction as a permanent member of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, SCO, is one such example. The three countries, which have been targets of U.S. sanctions, can now stand as a bulwark against American hegemonic endeavors.
Iran's top military commander has also announced that Tehran and Moscow have come to some good agreements concerning the expansion of the two sides' naval cooperation. On the expansion of maritime ties, the Iranian general pointed to various aspects of the two sides' maritime cooperation, such as the issue of Iran's participation in Russia's maritime drills, each side's participation in their respective armies and military competitions, and the mutual exchange of operational experiences. The two sides also talked about the meeting of the naval commanders of the Caspian littoral states and cooperation for the common Caspian maritime security. Then comes the issue of Iranian arms purchases from Russia. Iran plans to purchase defensive equipment from Russia, which comes after the termination of a decade-long UN arms embargo on Iran. It was on October 18, 2020, that the embargo was lifted under the Security Council Resolution 2231, which endorsed the 2015 nuclear agreement, officially known as Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, JCPOA.
As this core alliance between Russia and Iran for self-preservation expands, we will see a large number of countries trying to join this kind of a peace-oriented self-defense mechanism.
The administration of former U.S. President Donald Trump suffered an embarrassing loss after it failed to renew the Iranian arms embargo through a resolution of the U.N. Security Council. Iran's accession to become a full member of the SCO after waiting for years is another expansion of Iran's Look to the East policy. This involves the expansion of political, economic, and security cooperation led by Russia and China. The enhanced military cooperation between Russia and Iran can only bring about stability for the West Asia region.
Palestinian resistance movement Islamic Jihad says its prisoners in Israeli jails will not halt their hunger strike unless their demands are met. According to Islamic Jihad, 250 prisoners affiliated with the movement are already on hunger strike. The group said it expects more inmates to join the strike. The prisoners are protesting a series of repressive measures imposed on them following the escape of six inmates from a high-security Israeli jail last month. Five of the escapees, who were recaptured days later, are Islamic Jihad members. Some Islamic Jihad prisoners have been put in solitary confinement since the prison break. Israel has also intensified its clampdown on Palestinians across the occupied West Bank with more attacks and arbitrary detentions. Political commentator Paul Larudi says the Israeli regime is using extreme measures in its jails against Palestinians that run counter to international law.
I wish I could say that hunger strikes of 250 people or 1,000 people or however many people would bend the hearts and minds of the Israelis or of the leadership in the West that has the power to make changes. But I'm not optimistic, and my pessimism is borne out by experience. So this is very sad. I mean, it's a gesture. It's what these prisoners are able to do under the circumstances in order as a form of resistance. But they won't give up other forms of resistance, obviously. And much of these punishments are illegal under international law, as we know. Things like extreme punishment, confinement without solitary confinement, without a chance to see other prisoners or even to see daylight.
Israelis have begun the construction of new settler units in the occupied West Bank city of Hebron, also known as El Khalil. The project, which was approved by Israeli authorities 4 years ago, includes building 31 settler units in a military base. An Israeli anti-settlement group known as Peace Now has launched a legal action to stop the construction of the new settlement. It says the project is the first major expansion of Israeli settlements in the city in two decades. Palestinian residents in El Khalil say the new neighborhood would result in an increase in violence and consequently more restrictions on them. About 1,000 Israeli settlers live in El Khalil under heavy military protection among more than 200,000 Palestinians. All Israeli settlements are illegal under international law. Rabbi David Feldman is the spokesman of the Nutre Carta and joins us now live from New York. Rabbi, welcome. They say that nowhere in the occupied West Bank is there more violations by Israeli squatters backed by the Israeli regime than in El Khalil. Do you agree with that?
I have to say that Zionist aggression in Hebron didn't start today. If we go back in history, maybe the first famous tension that took place because of Zionist aggression was in 1929, even before the creation of the State of Israel, because of Zionist aggression at the time. And this is very important to clarify. And if I may quote Rabbi Baruch Kaplan, that was a famous religious Jewish rabbi in New York, passed away maybe 30 years ago. He was a teenager in 1929 in Hebron while the famous Hebron massacre took place. And he was so upset when the record was so wrong, when Zionist propaganda used and still used the Hebron massacre as a proof that the Arabs were so bad and we need a state of Israel to protect the Jewish people. And he says, and I quote, "The Arabs were very friendly people and the Jewish people in Hebron lived together with them and had very friendly relationships with them." And he continues to say, "No one in the yeshiva, in the religious school, ever told me it was dangerous to go by myself amongst the Arabs." And he continues at the end of this interview by saying as follows, "The Arabs were friendly people to us, and I'm a witness to it. We lived very well with them in Hebron. Rabbi Alter attests to this as well. And it was the accursed Zionist who cause them to hate us. The Zionists dare to use their power to expel the Arabs, and even today, those days back in Lebanon, they kill and butcher the Arabs." Now, we have to understand when we find today that 100 settlers live amongst 200,000 Palestinians in Hebron under a heavy military protection. It is a great question, why is this protection needed? if Jewish people lived so peaceful. Now the answer in 1929 is the same answer as we have to attest today. Unfortunately, it's the Zionist aggression that is causing this conflict from the very beginning to the present day. This is very sad. This is against humanity. This is against the Torah, the Jewish teachings. The settlers in no way represent the Jewish people, but it's not only the extremist settler movement, which don't represent myself or represent the Jewish people as a whole. It's the entire occupation, it's the entire state of Israel, which is wrong and does not represent Jewish people whatsoever.
And Rabbi, can you give us just an idea with regards to the settlements, the expansion of these settlements in Hebron, also known as Al-Khalil? How, you know, what life is like for Palestinians living there?
Well, it's ridiculous when we see what is happening, the occupation to begin with. But when this illegal settlement movement is just expanding and expanding and just pushing out the Arabs and just making all these problems and all this misery, all this serious oppression that the Palestinian people faced already for decades, just getting worse and worse. And it happens to be that the settler issue is something that the entire world, even those who might agree with Israel to a certain extent, realize and admit that this is internationally wrong, this is a crime, and this is wrong. There is no excuse. There's no excuse to the entire occupation, but certainly not to the settlement expansion.
Rabbi, thank you very much indeed for your contribution, your thoughts there. Rabbi David Feldman is the spokesman of the Nutria Carta International, joining us live out of New York. Now, Saudi warplanes have pounded the Yemeni capital Sana'a, killing at least one person and injuring three others. Yemeni media say the strikes targeted medicine storage units. A spokesman for Yemen's Ansar al-Allah movement condemned the bombing. Mohammed Abdel Salam also criticized as one-sided a recent UN Security Council statement that calls for de-escalation of violence in Yemen. He accused the world body of continuing its support for Saudi Arabia, saying such statements embolden Riyadh to intensify its onslaught and siege against Yemen. The remarks came after the 15-member Security Council called for an end to the Yemeni army's battle for Ma'rib, the last stronghold of Saudi-backed forces. The army has made significant gains there over the past months. That brings an end to our news bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
Unity Week. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. We are in the Unity Week. This week begins on the 12th and ends on the 17th of the Islamic month of Rabiul Awwal. Sayyid ibn Tawus, one of the celebrated Muslim scholars of the past centuries, writes, God the Exalted said to Adam to look at his progeny. Prophet Adam saw among his progeny a group whose light had engulfed everywhere with a special brightness. Adam asked God, My Lord, who are these? God answered, These are the messengers from your progeny. Adam asked, My God, why is the light of the last one of the messengers brighter? God said, because of his superiority over all messengers and saints. He asked, who is this messenger and what is his name? God said, this is Muhammad, the messenger, the prophet, the noble, the confident, the elect, the pure, the friend, the dearest creature with me and the most loved, the nearest and most known among my creatures. As for knowledge, forbearance, faith, certitude, chastity, humbleness, asceticism, and obedience, he is superior to all of them. I have taken pledge from the carriers of my throne and other creatures in the heavens and the earth to have faith in him and to admit his prophethood. O Adam, have faith in him so that your position, merit, light, and esteem would increase with me. Adam said, I have faith in God and his prophet, Muhammad. God said, so I increased your merit and nobility. O Adam, you are the first among my messengers, and Muhammad is the last of them. A study of the Noble Quran reveals that all previous nations and messengers had been obligated to admit the prophethood of the Prophet of Islam as the seal of all prophets. Ayah 81 of Surah Al-Imran reads, when Allah took a compact concerning the prophets, inasmuch as I have given you of the book and wisdom, should an apostle come to you thereafter, confirming what is with you, you shall believe in him and help him. According to this ayah, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, was quite known to other prophets. In view of this, the exegetes of the Noble Quran maintain that the most important feature of the prophet is that his name had been mentioned in the books of other religions. Ayah 157 of Surah A'raf reads in this regard, those who follow the apostle, the uninstructed prophet, whose mention they find written in the Torah and the Evangel. Ayah 146 of Surah Baqara also reads, those whom we have given the book recognize him just as they recognize their sons. Thus, the characteristics of the Prophet of Islam had been clearly mentioned in the previous scriptures. Historical accounts show that Prophet Jesus, peace upon him, used to speak of the signs of the emergence of the last prophet. He would give good tidings of the coming of Prophet Muhammad as the last messenger of God to mankind. German psychologist Carl Jaspers writes, what we know of Jesus with more certainty are his good news. Some of these good news about the last messenger are in the Torah and the Evangel. In the book of John, part 14, paragraph 16, we read, and I ask God, and he will grant you another comforter, that is Prophet of Islam. Prophet Jesus spoke several times of the coming of Paraclete or Comforter after him. He said, he won't come till I have not gone, If you like me, keep my recommendations. He's the pure spirit of God who will make you aware of all realities. It was because of this good news that when Niges, the Christian king of Abyssinia, got the letter of Prophet Muhammad's invitation, he said, "By God, this is the very prophet whom the people of the book are waiting for." The Torah also has mentioned some of the lofty merits of the Prophet of Islam. In the Deuteronomy, Prophet Moses says, "And God has told me, what they have said was good. I will raise up for them from among their brothers like you, and I will put my word in his mouth, and he will tell them whatever I commanded him." The Torah then makes it clear that God will not take his soul until he guides the backward nation and makes them familiar with the call of monotheism. Prophet Abraham was another great prophet who prayed to God while building the Kaaba. That is the symbolic house of God. "My Lord, raise up a prophet in this religion who is the inhabitant of here and recites your verses to them and teaches them the book and the wisdom and purifies them from pollutions and sins." Ka'b ibn Ghalib was a noted scholar who believed in the monotheistic creed of Abraham. He read the characteristics of the Prophet of Islam in the scriptures of Abraham and embraced Islam. Muhammad Sadiq al-Fakhr, the author of Anis al-Islam, was also a Christian priest who became acquainted with the personality of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, and embraced Islam. Imam Muhammad Baqir, peace upon him, the fifth infallible successor of Prophet of Islam, said on the name of the Prophet in the books of previous prophets, "The name of the Messenger of God was Mahi, or Eliminator, in the scriptures of Abraham, Had, or Struggle, in the Torah of Moses, Ahmad, in the Evangel, and Muhammad, in the Quran." Someone asked the meaning of these names, to which the Imam answered, "The Prophet, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, is the eliminator of idols and destroyer of polytheism. He has eliminated any god beside Allah." Had means that he struggles against anyone who fights God and God's religion, no matter if he is near or far away. Ahmad means that God has praised him in the best way. And his name is Muhammad because the Lord, the angels, the prophets, and all nations praise him and greet him.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and here are words of guidance from the Prophet of Islam that are food for thought for Islamic unity. On the day of resurrection, no foot of a servant of Allah will move before being asked about four things: the years and how they were spent, the body and how it was used, the wealth and how it was earned and spent, and about love towards us, the Ahlul Bayt.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Source of Evils. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Many books and articles have been written in respect of the harmful effects of wine, including fatal effects on the nervous and digestive systems and the heart, arteries, liver, kidneys, and other organs of the body. Drinking wine, consuming alcohol, not only brings about the destruction of the hereafter, it is also detrimental for every single one of its consumers in this world. We know the physical impact that the alcoholic beverages has on its consumers. Its painful social and economic consequences and shocking statistics have been investigated by thousands of scientists and contemplative minds. However, no phrase could be found as short, yet so comprehensive, as the valuable tradition of our Prophet, which in one sentence says it all. Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, the Prophet of Allah, he has said, "Avoid wine, which is the key of all evils." You know, when you look at those who consume alcohol, you're bound to conclude that this person, one way or the other, is going to be detrimental for the human society. We all feel that. Sometimes we express it, sometimes we don't, especially those living in the West. But we know deep down in our heart, through empirical evidence, that these people who consume alcohol, they are more dangerous for human societies than other human beings, generally speaking. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are discussing, in the light of a tradition, a source of all evils. Prophet Muhammad has said that drinking alcohol, consuming wine, is one of the most important and prevalent source of evil in human society. You know, just take a moment out and go onto the internet and just search vices or dangers of consuming alcohol. You would see, look at the local newspaper that you have for your city, you know, wherever you may be living in the West, where alcohol and wine and other, you know, beer and other alcoholic beverages are easily found and they're not illegal to be consumed. Just look at the local news. Even in places where it may be illegal and people are smuggling the alcohol in and consuming alcohol, look at what the aftermath of this consumption of alcohol is. I think for any sane and logical person, it is enough for him to be discouraged from consuming alcohol. Now, this is all in addition to what Islam has said. Islam has absolutely prohibited alcohol in any form and shape which is consumed to be intoxicated, right? This is in addition, we're looking at the aftermath and the effects of alcohol. Those effects and impacts on human society, on other innocent lives, on other human beings, enough in itself is enough for one to be convinced that consuming alcohol is something wrong and must be stopped. In Islamic lifestyle, consuming alcohol has no place whatsoever. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Natural disasters often disrupt normal life, but that's not the case with an Indian couple who got married despite their town being submerged by floodwaters. The couple, identified by local media as health workers in Kerala state, managed to reach a temple for the wedding in a giant cooking pot. They could be seen smiling and waving in their ceremonial clothes while two of their relatives were steering the pot. The couple reportedly borrowed the pot from the temple, saying that was the only option available. The pair was unwilling to postpone their big day, adding an unforgettable story to a country that is famous for many incredible things. Feeling down? It's all right to cry and get help. That's all what a place called the Crying Room tries to tell its visitors in Spain. The Crying Room is part of a building located in central Madrid. It's free and open to the public. The Crying Room aims to remove the stigma attached to mental health, crying, and seeking help. It offers a wide range of services, from a corner to crying, to a phone with a list of psychologists people can call. Motivating messages are also visible on the walls. People have hailed the initiative, saying it helps them speak out about their negative emotions.
I think it's an excellent idea to visualize the widespread of the mental health issue. And I think it's a really fun take on it, to call it the crying room, because of the Spanish expression, if you want to cry, go to the crying room. So it's kind of stigmatized to cry in Spain, as in many other countries. So I wanted to take part in this this visualization of the problem.
The crying room was opened in an effort to raise awareness about mental health and well-being. Official data in Spain showed that around 40% of people had symptoms of depression last year. Another 30% experienced anxiety.
The first movie in orbit in the making. Two Russian nationals who travel to the International Space Station to shoot scenes of that movie are now back on Earth. The Soyuz MS-18 spacecraft carrying an actress and a film director undocked from the ISS early Sunday and successfully touched down in Kazakhstan about 3 hours later. The film crew, along with a veteran astronaut, blasted off from the Russian leased Baikonur Cosmodrome earlier this month. They spent 12 days in the ISS to shoot the scenes. The mission beats a Hollywood movie project starring Tom Cruise. The mission adds to a long list of firsts for Russia's space industry. Fabric cuts used to recreate Vietnamese landscapes. A woman living in the capital, Hanoi, has been doing that for 40 years now. The artist, 61 years old, explains what material she uses to create her artworks.
All the details in my artworks are cut from cloth which is used for oyai, traditional costume, or cut from silk scarves. These are very small details, and I have to get the whole cloth for oyai. I even have to cut them from beautiful silk scarves sent from my friends abroad.
Tuk says sometimes hundreds of thousands of pieces of cloth are needed to shape the scenes. The cuts should be put together very carefully. Besides that, the woman has to work in a room without any air conditioning, even in the boiling summers of Hanoi. That's because, she says, the pieces of cloth are very tiny and would easily be blown away. Her hard work has paid off. The creations sell for up to $5,000. The Vietnamese artist says her work are a summary of the passion and the beauty she has experienced after traveling across her country.
Materials and methods are vital for an artist who combines them to create a masterpiece. Well, a Brazilian artist has used an unusual material to create a huge, dazzling artwork. Mandano has drawn a mural measuring 1,000 square meters using ashes from the burned Amazon rainforest. The artwork on the side of a building in the city of Sao Paulo depicts a firefighter standing near the scenes of deforestation, blazes, and dead animals. Mandano says he traveled extensively to feel that sadness and, more importantly, to collect ashes for his paintings. He says his aim is to call attention to the environment in his home country, where thousands of wildfires break out each year.
Be the first to catch the balloon. That's what competitors played to win the title at the first Balloon World Cup in Spain. The competition was held in an amusement park in the northeastern city of Tarragona. Participants had to get the balloon to touch the ground before their opponent could touch it. The event was organized by FC Barcelona player Gerard Piqué and a famous web streamer and commentator.
Get out of your comfort zone and try new things. Today we are very proud to have tried something like that, and that it has worked so well, and that people have enjoyed it. In the end, it's about people having a great time.
The competition was inspired by a trio of American siblings whose balloon game videos had attracted millions of views on TikTok and Instagram. 32 countries competed for the title. An 18-year-old teenager from Peru became the first world champion of this tournament. He defeated his German rival in a 5-minute final match. We'll be right back. those of you with an extreme fear of needles, this may finally be the good news. A group of Dutch researchers say they are working to create painless needle-free injections. The researchers have developed what they call a bubble gun. The device uses a laser to push tiny droplets through the skin. Take a listen to David Fernandez Rivas, the head of the project, explaining how the process is done within a millisecond.
So within a millisecond, the glass that contains the liquid is heated by a laser. A bubble is created in the liquid, pushing the liquid at velocities on the order of 100 kilometers per hour. And we can see the gelatin, how it penetrates about 1 millimeter approximately.
Now, Rivas says the invention will help ease fear of needles and lower the threshold for vaccinations. He believes the new technology can also prevent the risk of contamination through needles and reduce medical waste. If you're eager to get a needle-free shot, you may still have to wait a few more years before they are made available to everyone. From a voyage aboard a fictional spacecraft to a real-life journey to space, a 90-year-old Canadian actor known for his portrayal of a starship captain for decades is now the oldest person ever going to space. After a couple of days of training, William Shatner hitched a ride aboard a suborbital spacecraft on Wednesday. He took off from a Texas desert as a guest alongside three other passengers, two professionals, and a paid customer. During the 10-minute flight, the team experienced more than 3 minutes of weightlessness. Now, listen to the actor describing the voyage as the most unbelievable experience of his life.
I'm so filled with emotion about what just happened. It's extraordinary. I hope I never recover from this. I hope that I can maintain what I feel now. I don't want to lose it.
During a televised journey, the capsule took its four passengers above the maximum altitude of 100 kilometers, a point where the curvatures of the Earth can be seen. With that, the space captain of the entertainment world also broke a record as the oldest space traveler. Now, many see his experience as the embodiment of the space travel promises he made through decades of acting.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
The population of giant pandas in captivity has reached a record high of 673 in 2021. Official data shows this year 48 panda cubs were born, of which 46 survived. Meanwhile, the total number of overseas giant pandas has reached 69. This is the result of joint efforts by Chinese and foreign researchers following decades of caring for the lovely animals. In July, another study put the number of giant pandas living in the wild at over 1,800. The cute bears were then reclassified from endangered to vulnerable. Experts believe such research improves conservation efforts and facilitates monitoring of animal populations. With the help of artificial intelligence, Beethoven's 10th and last symphony is now completed. A group of German musicologists and programmers started the project over a year ago. They analyzed Beethoven's style and then used algorithms to teach a computer to complete the unfinished job. The work was released to mark the 250th anniversary of the prominent musician's death. The team said they tried hard to solve the puzzle while remaining faithful to Beethoven's process and vision.
I believe that if a composer like Ludwig van Beethoven were to live today, he would probably not only have a large technology team around him to help him, but he would push exactly such technologies and use them for his art. And for me, art is not something that stands fixed in space and is always the same, but that changes with the world, and we can witness that today.
When the German composer died in 1827, he left behind some musical sketches for his 10th symphony. Some experts tried to complete it in the past, but they did not succeed. Researchers in the United States have created an incredibly versatile robot named Leonardo O'Leo. Leo was developed by a team at the California Institute of Technology's Center for Autonomous Systems and Technologies. The futuristic robot can walk a tightrope, skateboard, and even fly. Its uniqueness lies in the fact that it uses not just one, but two modes of locomotion. The researchers who developed Leo believe that similar robots will be employed on a wider scale in the future.
I think we're going to see robots like Leonardo with these extraordinary locomotion capabilities be used in things like space exploration, because they can overcome very difficult terrain, they can reach hard-to-reach places. But then I think also robots will be more and more in our daily lives. As these robots become more and more robust, more and more reliable, we're going to see them for things like package delivery or helping in the house with daily chores.
Leo is 75 centimeters tall and has four propeller thrusters mounted on its shoulders. While walking, it mimics the movements of a human by using those propellers and a pair of actuated legs. The robot can transition smoothly between flying and walking. Leonardo perceives the world around it with the help of cameras and sensors. Hot air balloons were invented in the 18th century, enabling man to finally fulfill his dream of flying. After more than 200 years, people are still eager to ride the colorful vehicles. Some even use them competitively. In the German hot air ballooning championships, balloonists will fly over the skies of the green Bavarian town of Tegernsee. 25 of Germany's best pilots are vying for first place. The organizers of the event expect a tight race, as the contestants have all managed to pass the previous competitions with flying colors to qualify for the national championship.
A zoo in northeast France has an adorable new inhabitant, a white baby rhinoceros. The cute little male rhino was born on the 6th of October. The zoo staff have given him the name of Mole. He was able to withstand less than 2 hours after being born. Mole soon started feeding from his gentle 21-year-old mother called Tala. Mole is Tala's third baby.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB
IRIB English Radio, with you every single moment.
The limelight.
When it comes to climate change, the point of no return has already passed. That is the message of a new report published in the esteemed scientific journal Environmental Research Letters. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Matthew Rozza, journalist. This article is published under the heading Report Predicts Flooding Due to Climate Crisis Will Displace Millions. Stay tuned for more. When it comes to climate change, the point of no return has already passed. That is the message of a new report published in the esteemed scientific journal Environmental Research Letters. It paints a picture of a future Earth in which, regardless of actions taken today, hundreds of millions of people will be displaced from their homes by rising sea levels. The carbon dioxide emissions already released into our atmosphere will linger for hundreds of years, warming the oceans and thus causing sea levels to rise. The only question now is whether the damage can be limited. The answer, according to the report, is yes, but humans will need to take specific drastic actions as soon as possible. The authors of the report write, meeting the most ambitious goals of the Paris Climate Agreement will likely reduce exposure by roughly half and may avoid globally unprecedented defense requirements for any coastal megacity exceeding a contemporary population of 10 million. The report was co-written by Benjamin H. Strauss and Scott A. Call of Climate Central, DJ Rasmussen, Princeton University, and German scientist Anders Levermann. The long-term goal of the Paris Agreement is to limit the mean increase in global temperatures to no more than 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. Even if that happens, however, oceans will continue to swell, meaning there will be millions upon millions of drenched city dwellers. Roughly 5% of the world's population today live on land below where the high tide level is expected to rise based on carbon dioxide that human activity has already added to the atmosphere, Strauss told AFP. With roughly 7.8 billion human beings alive today, this means approximately 390 million currently live on land that will be under the high tide level as a result of climate change. That said, reducing the temperature rise is crucial, experts say. If Earth's average temperature increases by even half a degree Celsius, an extra 200 million people will be vulnerable to the effects of sea level rise and increased storm surges. Each successive degree only increases damage as sea levels progressively rise and thereby displace more people. In the report, the scientists offer detailed projections for the 20 most affected large countries, those with at least 25 million people, in terms of the percentages of their populations that currently occupy land below high tide lines based on different warming scenarios. If the planet merely warms by 1.5 degrees Celsius, 2.8% of the population of the United States could be directly impacted.